Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Donnie Rudd. The author of the Palladium book had a family emergency, so we'll be rescheduling her. Dr. Rudd has been so kind to come in at short notice to talk about PEMT, exciting new therapy, stem cells, and other new breakthroughs on the forefront of medicine. He is a biochemical engineer, an attorney, a doctor of divinity, and I'm anxious to hear how he got involved in this new technology. Welcome, Dr. Rudd. Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here.
Well, I guess the first question is, how did you, I guess we'll tell people a little bit about what pulsed electronic magnetic therapy is, and then if you'll tell your story about how you got involved in the technology.
Okay, you want me to talk about the pulse therapy first?
Well, just give them a little bit of a synopsis of it, because I'm sure you'll be referring to it.
Pulse therapy is using low-level magnetic fields of a particular type to upregulate or just enhance the body's ability to heal itself. So all we're talking about is taking the natural mechanism in the body and enhancing it so that it heals much faster.
Right. Okay. And you want to tell a little bit about your background and how you came to study this?
Well, I was originally a chemical engineer for a number of years with two major corporations, Quaker Oats and U.S. Gypsum. And then I went into private practice as a patent attorney. So I was in patents for some time, and then semi-retired and was asked by a friend of mine to come back into a small company here in Houston that was doing stem cell research. It had just begun, and they were working very closely with NASA. In fact, their research was all being done at NASA to do the research in the stem cell technology. And I did that for approximately 12 years, took a license to their process that we had developed for the PEMF technology, and we formed a corporation, and we're using that, and that's what I work on now primarily, is the pulse electromagnetic field technology.
Now, I have experienced this technology. We have a office about a half mile from here that is part of Millennium Healthcare that has this technology in it. So I am familiar with it. I guess I'm not real familiar, though, with how it interacts in terms of increasing stem cells, because I think that's one of the key mechanisms of action. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I can take a few minutes and go into the history of how our particular product was developed. And
okay.
It may explain it. I was originally doing the stem cell work with NASA, like I had mentioned, and that was back just after the year 2000. And our original goal was to take peripheral blood out of the arm, just like you take a blood test, and separate the adult stem cells, and that's what we're talking about, adult stem cells in humans. And we were going to separate the adult stem cells and then expand them or multiply them, grow them, whichever term you want to use. And they were going to be then useful for the astronauts in space travel and on the space station in case there was an entry there where you could not get the astronaut down to an emergency room right away. You could start perhaps repairing the tissue that was damaged for whatever reason or was failing in space. And, of course, if you ever did a long trip to someplace like Mars, then you would have to be able to treat anything while you were on that long trip because there would not be any emergency room services. Another thing that we were looking at is the bone mass. People don't realize that being an astronaut is not all glamour. One of my friends who worked with me on this technology is Dr. David Wolf, who by background was an electrical engineer, MD, and an astronaut, and he did two visits to the space station each for 6 months. And he said when he came back from the six-month trip to the space station, he had lost 45% of his bone mass, which then had to be recovered.
Yeah.
Quite dangerous. And so another thing we're going to try to do is be able to minimize that bone loss while an astronaut was in space.
Yeah, that's extremely important because I think they have a limit on how long they can stay out there due to that factor. Isn't that right?
That's
Isn't that
correct.
One of the limiting factors?
That's
one of the astronauts in the military, so I know a little bit about the space physiology stuff.
That right now is a thing that will prevent a trip to Mars, for instance, to go to Mars, you're going to have to do something with that bone loss problem, and the only way to do that would be to have a ship that was a quarter of a mile in diameter, which would be very, very difficult to build, and because it would have to rotate to create an artificial gravity like the Earth's artificial gravity, so they could put pressure on the bones and keep them going. So that's a big problem with that project.
So what did you find out with stem cells and bone mass in space?
Well, what we found out, when we started our work, we thought it'd be a rather simple task to expand or grow the stem cells. We isolated them, and we put them in a culture in a flask, and thought, well, we can grow these things, and then we can proceed to start attempting to regenerate tissue. We put them in the flask, and within a matter of hours, we had found out that the cells are what is called adherent. They would stick to the sides of the flask and immediately die. So how do we overcome that problem? Well, we're working with NASA. Let's just put them up on a shuttle flight where there's no gravity, and they won't stick to the sides of the flask. So we did that, and we were able to grow a therapeutic level of cells in space, so we knew that we had to overcome that problem. We ultimately came back to Earth and designed a little bioreactor, if you will, that would keep the cells from hitting the sides of the container, and we were able to grow the cells in the container then without them all dying off. But we found two other things were happening on the shuttle flights. As the shuttle went in and out of the Earth's polar magnetic field, there was a spurt in growth of the cells. And also the media that was holding the cells became loaded with natural growth factors, GCSF and a number of the others. The things that signal the brain to start growing the stem cells to treat a damaged area in the body. So we knew that there was something to that, and we concluded it had to be the magnetic field change that was going on over the Earth's polar magnetic field. So that's what we had to overcome or discover the proper way of doing it to make our device work.
Great. So you just sort of mimicked Earth's magnetic field, but pulsed it.
Well, we thought it'd be that easy, and it wasn't. The first thing we attempted was what's called the sinusoidal wave, just a standard wavy type wave, and it gave some results. But it was nothing like we were seeing on the shuttle flights. So we knew we were missing something. Well, after a few more years of research, we discovered it had to be a square wave, just like a square going up and straight over and coming back down.
Right.
The first time we tried that, the results were fantastic. The second time we tried it, the results were great, but not fantastic. So we knew we were missing something. Back to the drawing board in the lab for another 2 to 3 years, and we found out that it not only had to be a square wave, but it had to drop off rapidly at the back end, called the slew rate, and had to have a rest period every so often, and that was what made it work. And so we tried that, and it was extremely successful. We're the only device out there that has the type of wave that we have, and I don't think anybody else is going to really come up with the type wave we have very easily, because you would need data from the shuttle flights to duplicate what we have. And, of course, there are no more shuttle flights, so we have a particular advantage in our design.
Great. So how is this interfacing with medicine today?
We started out initially the first 2 years working with veterinarians to work on animals. And we have a website, wehealanimals.com, that shows pictures and videos of some of the animals we treated. And there's a very good one with what we call our poster girl, a little dachshund named Harley, that jumped off the bed and broke her back and was not able to walk. And we put the device on. In fact, the dog had been placed with a carriage on its back leg so it could try to get around. And finally, the owners had given up being able to do anything for her. So they decided they should euthanize her. And that was at the time my salesman walked into the vet's office, and that was the very first application we'd ever tried. And my salesman said, before you put that dog down, why don't you give us a shot at it? Put the unit on the dog, and the videos are on the internet showing it 4 days. The dog is running around, still needs a little leg to bring coordination, and at 10 days, it's pretty much fully healed. So we did numerous animal testing in the first 2 years with dogs and horses, and found out that it worked. And then have just recently, within the last 8 months, moved into the human area for treatment. And it's being used fairly extensively now with humans, back problems, muscles, ligaments. It'll accelerate the healing of a bone very rapidly. One of our biggest markets is the sports market, professional athletes. Whereas they get injured, and there's a lot of money involved when they get injured if they are not able to play and go on the disabled list. So they want to get back on the field as quickly as possible, and we can put the unit on them then and cut the amount of healing time dramatically to solve the problem. So it's working very well.
Well, we're waiting for Cytori to get FDA approval for their stem cell extraction process from adult fat. But it seems to me that there would be an application either before you extract the fat, especially in the abdomen, to use the technology to increase increase yields, and then also post-op, once you transfer it to the breast or the face, to make sure that the stem cells do well. What do you think?
Well, you don't need to increase the adipose cells or the fat cells before you take them out, because there's plenty there. So that's not a problem that you have to deal with. However, once you inject, we're starting to work with a lot of doctors, and we've done this over in the veterinary market where they had used stem cells, and right after you inject, then if you put the unit on, you kick it up a real notch. So you, while the stem cell injection may be healing or treating, you're going to still cut the healing time dramatically by putting the unit on post-op or post-treatment.
Well, what we're finding is if you just do fat transfer and don't do any isolation of the fat, the adult fat stem cells, you lose about 50%, which is not good in the breast because it can calcify and cause nodules and cause other problems. If you do the Cytori, they're claiming they get a 70% transfer. But it seems to me, I mean, once you transfer it, 70% lives. But it seems to me if you use the technology, you might up that to 90%, which would be really nice because you might imagine that not all women have a great deal of fat, and you have to have a certain volume of fat to transfer to the breast to get the size you want, either for cosmetic or reconstructive means. So if somebody's fairly skinny, it's difficult to, you have a volume problem, unless they put on weight.
That's correct. There is a big loss factor in getting it in, then using the PEMF technology will decrease that. And it's not unusual, by the way, to see an 80% loss. And so you've got to deal with that in using the unit. We've seen results where it's over 90% save rate on the cells. So that becomes very significant in what you're doing.
Well, we're waiting right now because the FDA has come out with a position that's kind of interesting. I read a letter they wrote to a plastic surgeon, and the FDA considers once the fat leaves the body, even if very little is done to it before it's injected, they consider that stem cells, and you need FDA approval to re-inject them. So at this point, the FDA is not real interested in having us play around with this technology in terms of other things we can do. I mean, it's not just the Cytori technology. There's other laser light technologies. There's all sorts of things you can do to activate your stem cells, so including what you're saying, magnetic technologies. So right now the FDA is considering all of these things, not to be done on anything other than within clinical trials. So we're not at, I guess, we don't have the freedom to play around with it, at least in the United States. I think outside the United States they're doing research.
Right, and while I normally think this many times, FDA goes overboard in looking at things, I happen to agree with them in this area. There was a recent case out in California where a cosmetic doctor or plastic surgeon, if you will, had taken stem cells out of a woman, I believe it was adipose cells, and injected it around the eye to get rid of wrinkles. And very shortly, the woman started going blind and went to another doctor, and they found out that the injection of the cells was turning into bone. And so she had to go through about 8 hours of surgery to correct that problem. And the problem is, if it's pure stem cells, it should not be a problem. It's the minute you start injecting or mixing anything into the stem cells that you create a problem. Stem cells are programmed to do what we call differentiation. You've got your basic cells, your CD38 cells, as we call it, 134, and then they can turn into anything in the body. That's what stem cells do from original. But as what happened out in California was a doctor had mixed a calcium compound with the cells and a number of other things before injection. And when the calcium was put with the cells, that immediately signaled the cells, well, we should start differentiating into calcium. And so it started mm-hmm. going down the line and converting the cells to bone cells.
Right.
And that then became very dangerous. So it's mixing the cells with anything that creates a problem. And FDA is correct. They're really strong on you can't mix the cells with anything.
Yeah, we just don't know the effects. And the other big question, which I've seen some research out of the University of Pennsylvania on this, but is if somebody has a history of cancer, is playing around with the stem cells, especially injecting them into the breast where the cancer was, or maybe still is, at a cellular level, is that going to increase the risk of cancer? You want to address that?
I think there's a very real risk there. We just don't know what the results are going to be. We mm-hmm. have found that one of the things we grow as well as stem cells is we grow cancer cells. And in our instructions, we have the do's and the don'ts, and one of them is that you don't put it on a person where you know there's cancer mm-hmm. because it could create a very dangerous situation. So I have from time to time people call me up and say, I've got cancer, I want to get a unit to try to cure the cancer, and I will say, I'm not selling you a unit. Because
right.
I think it could hasten your death. So I said it'd be nice to get your money from you, but I'm not going to take your money. I'm not going to give you a unit.
Mm-hmm.
There are two other cautions that we have with the unit as well. One is we don't like to see it put on the brain or the heart yet because... those are electrical systems, and we may interfere with it, and I just haven't seen any safety data or no safety data where I could okay it. I'm from the old school, do no harm.
Right.
So as the first rule. So until I see sufficient safety data, then I'm not going to approve it. If there's a pacemaker, you sure don't want to put it on because it'll interfere with that.
Yeah, that's true.
And the other restriction is you don't put it on a pregnant woman.
Right.
Or have anywhere near, because the embryo is programmed to multiply very rapidly. Embryonic cells turn from 2 cells to 19 billion cells in 9 months, which is what we call a baby. And we might move the growth rate up enormously and have the baby fully developed in the womb at 3 months, say. So we say those are the things you absolutely cannot do.
Yeah, and the baby develops a long electromagnetic grid as well. So you don't want to mess with that. you might have cells to move in ways that they're not supposed to. That's probably part of what endometriosis is cells not quite catching up along that movement, and leaving a few cells behind.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. So basically, what are some of the clinical trials right now involving either PEMF or related stem cell research that you're aware of?
Well, there are quite a large number of studies going on in the stem cell area. The last I looked, there were 1,014 different programs at the universities, various places doing stem cell research over on the adult side. The embryonic is pretty much died out. It's not the rage that it once was because an embryonic cell, if you take it out and grow it a little and then put it back in the body, like I had mentioned, it's programmed to grow very rapidly. In 9 months to become a 6 or 8 pound mass, and if you put it in the breast or you put it in the heart, in 9 months it's going to be a 9 pound or 6 pound mass, which with that rapid growth rate we call that cancer. So that's a nasty side effect for anything. But with the adult stem cells. There are a lot of studies going on now. I'm aware of a number of them. There's a very good study being done at Johns Hopkins on pancreas regeneration, the islets in the pancreas, which would be the cure for diabetes. That's all you have to do to cure diabetes. And that Dr. Mahbub Hussein there is doing it in very excellent work. And I think actually the preliminary results show that it can be done. That will have to wind its way through the FDA process, but that's mm-hmm. being very successful. Doctors Willerson and Perrin at Texas Heart Institute here in Houston have a very successful program going on heart regeneration. They did their initial work down in Brazil and then came here and were able to bypass the Phase 1 FDA study. And now in Phase 2, and they routinely regenerate hearts. They've had a 100% success rate thus far with no failures. However, they are taking bone marrow stem cells. They do an aspheresis of the iliac crest on the hip to get the cells out, and they separate them immediately in a clean room while the patient's being rolled into the operating room and take the cells right over and put it in so they don't mix anything with it. And it's very successful. So there are quite a few very successful programs going on, and they're working very well. We're doing studies on bone regeneration, healing bone rapidly, tissue, knees, and so forth. And we've got some very good work about to start on stress incontinence in women, where preliminary results in other countries have shown that very quickly it was just stress incontinence. Now, there are a number of incontinence things within the body, but we're talking just about the stress now where the floor level muscle and nerve have been damaged, usually due to childbirth, and we can that's been regenerated in just a few days. So the women that have tried it thus far, especially outside of the country, they initially did work in stem cells, and we're getting ready to do our first study very shortly now. The incontinence area, and I think it will be very successful. We do have a report coming out very shortly from the leading testing company in the world in New Jersey that will show that the unit dramatically decreases inflammation and pain when applied. So there are quite a few studies going on.
Yeah. What about post-surgical applications?
I haven't seen that much interest in it in this country, like some of the foreign countries. There are places in the world that are starting to routinely use it. We've got a doctor in Malaysia now that does quite a bit of surgery, and I think in virtually every surgery that they do in that hospital, they used the unit on post-surgery to accelerate healing.
You probably have to wait a couple of weeks because, I mean, I've used the unit myself, and there's like a, you know, you wouldn't want to use it right after surgery. You might get some bleeding, but once you've got a little bit of strength there, you could use it.
Well, that's correct. Some people think you can just slap it on right away. We found out that the body really needs a little time to adjust to the surgery so that where the cut is from the surgery, the body will signal the need for repair, and what happens is there's a cytokine, interleukin, that immediately surveys the problem where the incision was made and signals the brain that the brain should direct the bone marrow to start kicking out additional stem cells to go there and do the correction. So current belief is that you should wait a short time period before putting the unit on to give the body time to start the signaling.
Right.
However, I will tell you that the pro athletes, they, even though we tell them, wait just a little and wait before you get somebody back on the field or the court, they will put it on right away so they can be back in the game the next Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And what about with, you know, like racehorses and other animals that are, well, especially racehorses, I guess. Is this being used there, too?
It is. We have on the Wheel Animals website a study done by Casmark in Versailles, Kentucky. Casmark is the leading rehab facility in the world for thoroughbred mm-hmm. racehorses. Mm-hmm. They have tested it on a number of horses. These are high net worth racehorses, and it's been very successful in leg problems and tendonitis or an inflammation of the tendons. And those results are posted on the website. We have also had a number of instances where it has been used on broken bones in horses, which many times you would give up on, and we've had complete healing of the horse's leg bone within 10 days.
That's remarkable.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, probably wouldn't need to put horses down again for broken legs unless the break was real severe.
Yeah. Getting the leg bone healed very quickly is very important because usually they put the horse down or it has to be sacrificed later. And the problem is not with the leg bone that causes the need for euthanizing the horse. It's they have to put the horse in a sling to take the pressure off the leg while they're mm-hmm. healing it in the conventional manner. And mm-hmm. Then the horse is not able to put pressure on the foot, and it's actually the inflammation of the hoof that causes the death of the horse. Matter of fact, the horse, I believe, was in the Derby, Barbaro, who had massive breaks in the leg. They were able to treat the legs, and the legs were healing quite well. He had a lot of pins and hardware in to hold the bones together, but it was the infection in the hoof called laminitis that actually created the death of that horse, and that was a world champion derby winner.
Right. So what are some of the diseases? You mentioned diabetes. Are there other diseases or conditions? I think I read something about spinal cord injuries. Being studied. Is that being studied in humans or just still in at the animal level?
We've had very good success in the animal area. There are a number of studies going on in the human area. There was a company called Osiris that was doing excellent stem cell injection work for spinal treatment, and it was quite successful. But they had, with their process, which, as you can imagine, with spinal was very extensive, they had spent about $800 million developing it. Which quite a bit of money, and they, from a business standpoint, concluded that if they kept pouring money into it, they would never recover their investment. So they discontinued work rather than pour any more money into it. But there is some good spinal work going on. Now, with the spine, it depends. depends on how much damage has been done, if there's total severing of the spine, if a surgeon's gone in and done something to it that make it impossible to heal, then, you know, I tell people we're MDs and PhDs, but we're not GODs. There is a limit as to what can be done. Now, I do know of one lady that was treated with the pulse field, and she had been paralyzed from the waist down for 39 years due to a diving board accident. She was at the doctor's, and the doctor said she had a back problem, which from sitting in the wheelchair, and went in for treatment on that. And the doctor asked if she would like to try something and put this unit on to see what the result is. And he had her come in the office and spend the whole day there with the unit on. She says, "You know, I think I'm feeling something in my feet."
Really?
And so he got permission to test it just on her, an internal review board, and put it out. And 2 months later, she was up and walking.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
That's quite an anecdotal study.
It's quite an anecdotal study, and I did just one time. Now, this lady had not... when she did it, there had been no attempted surgical repair. So you were going with the straight injury. If a surgeon gets in, then
you have more of a mess.
Depending on what the you have more of a mess. That's correct.
That's right. Well, you have scar tissue, and that's always going to be a little more challenging to get nerves to grow through. I know. I'm a hand surgeon. I operate on upper extremities and lower extremities, and a lot of times we just go in an area of injury and we just take the scar tissue off the nerve, pack fat around it, and guess what? It works pretty well in a few months.
Right.
So, you know, and I just wonder, packing the fat around it, I just wonder if we're bringing stem cells in. A lot of times I get the fat out of the groin.
You probably are.
There's stem cells there. Yeah. That's probably what we're doing. So that's interesting. But it does work, and
I think the field is wide open, and I really think the pulsed electromagnetic has a big play in it, because it's, as I said earlier, it's enhancing the body's natural mechanism for healing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing I'm thinking is that if you put the device on after surgery. I'd be really interested to see whether or not the exact mechanism of how it's healing. Like, for example, I'm beginning to think it may not be by laying scar tissue down quickly. It may be has anybody looked at animal studies to see exactly what is changing more quickly once the animals are treated with a device after surgery? Do they know exactly what's happening?
Not exactly. There still needs to be work done on that. There is on our websites. We've got three websites: We Heal Plus, We Heal Animals, and We Help Plus. But on each of them, there's a study that was done at Texas A&M Veterinary School. Where we took New Zealand white rabbits, which is the animal of choice for bone studies, because you can get the same sex, weight, and age, and so forth very easily without it costing a fortune. And we took a rather large piece of the leg bone out in comparison to the length of the leg, and we put on one set of animals, it was blind study, we put on one set of animals a unit that was dead. It was not working. And on the other unit that was working, and the results are on the website. After 14 days, you can see the growth of the bone developing quite nicely on the live unit and nothing on the dead unit. And then at 28 days, the bone is substantially healed with the unit treating it. And the other one is starting to see maybe some growth, but I don't think it would have ever healed. A non-union fracture of that size normally will not heal.
Right.
So very successful. And now we're trying to find out exactly what you were talking about. What's the mechanism? How here? How do we make sure we understand it fully and control it?
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, with injury, the body lays down fibroblasts. And fibroblasts can be very damaging to function, as you know, especially with tendons and nerves. So I would imagine it is not by increasing fibroblasts, which is what happens primarily with wound healing. I would imagine it would increase muscle cells, bone cells, blood vessels, you know, whatever is fat cells, you know, whatever the tissue is, you would actually regenerate that tissue. So it's a completely different kind of wound healing than we usually see post-surgery.
That's correct.
Yeah. What about limb regeneration? Any research in that area?
There is, quite frankly, when we got into it with NASA, the military was very interested in taking a look at what was going on. There's a agency with that does work for the military called DARPA, the Advanced Research that does all the far-out stuff, their cyborg research and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their goals is to be able to, if a soldier comes back with a lost limb from Afghanistan or Iraq or wherever, is it possible to totally regenerate that limb?
Right.
And also treat burn victims, which we know the unit does quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the military is probably the leader in that. Doing that research, and of course the military has one big advantage over the rest of us. They are not subject to FDA.
I know. I was in the military 13 years, and I worked at the Brooke Army Burn Unit. I had one patient who was a soldier over in Germany. He was filling up his lighter with lighter fluid, with a lit cigarette in his mouth when he spilled the lighter fluid on him. And basically he had an 80% total body surface area burn. The only thing that wasn't burnt, he had a helmet on and he had boots on. And so I had the privilege of resurfacing the rest of him from those areas. And he did live, but it's highly unusual for an 80% to live, as you know. So, and we didn't even have the skin cultures then. That was back in the early 80s. So I understand the clinical challenges.
Yeah, and we were getting prepared to possibly do a study at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, which is one of the leading burn centers in the country. And everything was progressing and had the stem cell work all set up and so forth. And there was a little problem called Hurricane Ike that destroyed half of the medical school and all of the labs and everything we were intending on using. And it's never really got back together fully functioning again. So that was a big loss for us.
Well, there's nothing quite like burn patients, because you only have a certain amount of time to get them resurfaced before they die of infection. Even today, it doesn't matter. I mean, I used to skin a cadaver a day and replace the cadaver skin on them every day, but that's not good either. I mean, you really need stem cell technology to cover an 80%er.
Yeah, we've got a program. It's just beginning down in South America for burn victims. A friend of mine invested in a company down there that was treating burn victims, had a method of putting skin on, which supposedly would accelerate the healing, and it was not doing quite well. It the problem was it wasn't catching quick enough that it was being rejected. Because you've got a very short window here to do that work, and I suggest to him, hey, we can kick this up a notch and maybe get inside that window for the healing if you can use a one of the electromagnetic units with it. So that's being tried now, and I think very successfully.
Yeah, well, that I can see where that would work. But these patients are naturally immunosuppressed, so you do have a little bit of a window. But, you know, the two things we have is cadaver skin and pig skin. And I guess now they're doing cell cultures, you know, but those that skin is very, very thin. You know, it's just not really good quality skin.
Right.
So we do need something else. And a large number of people probably still die of infectious complications.
Oh, sure.
Before they can be resurfaced. So it's a delicate, challenging, it's probably the hardest work I ever did. Was working in the burn units because you're racing against time. So, yeah, good luck with that. I think that would be an area that would be very, very beneficial. So we have just a few more minutes left. Do you want to tell the audience about how they can learn more about this? And if I guess that do you have machines for sale at this point?
Yes, we do. What I would suggest first, well, if they're really into the technical side, they can go to my personal website, DonnieRudd.com. It's DonnieRudd, and there's a list of all the stem cell patents and applications on there that I've done over the years. But that's very highly technical. But then I would suggest first go to the website, wehealanimals.com, and that shows all of the animal studies we did. And then go to WeHeal Plus, which shows the human work that's been done thus far. So that's a good place to go. And then if they've got questions, I'm always free to talk to people. I spend most of my day on the telephone working with people that have questions. It doesn't bother me to talk to somebody about their problems. And I'm very candid with people. If it's something I don't think will help, I tell them it won't help. You know, I'm very honest. I don't give them false hope. If it's something that we haven't ever tried it on, then I will tell them that it's never been tried on that. But if they want to try it, they can try it. And if it doesn't work, they can send the unit back. If it works, then they should purchase it. So we do that. But if there's no hope, then we'll tell them. One of the things we have found out, just as an example, is what's called a Jones fracture in the foot, which is the bone going into the foot from the little toe. There's very little circulation there, and there's really no treatment by doctors yet for it. They just put a cast on and try to wait it out, which takes months.
It's kind of like a scaphoid fracture, isn't it, in the wrist? Isn't there an equivalent thing in the wrist?
Right.
Yeah.
And we had an athletic trainer for one of the universities that had two of his starting football players last year that had Jones fractures, two at the same time on one team. And the doctors had said, you put them in a cast, the season's gone for them. And he said, what do you think you can do? And I said, well, we've never tried it on that. But we're game. We'll let you take some units and see if it works. And we actually tried for 6 weeks on those two athletes with no improvement whatsoever. It's just as important to me to find something that doesn't work as it is to find something that works, because then we don't waste people's time and get false hopes. If I know it's not going to work, then I want to tell people I don't think there's any chance at all. I don't think you should purchase a unit. We do have units for sale. They call me, or if I'm not available, I get one of the salesmen. We do take credit cards for the units, so they are for sale.
Well, how much is a unit?
The units are $800.
Okay. Great.
Now, one of the things, by the way, we're often asked, is this unit, you can see a picture of it on the websites, it's smaller than a pack of cigarettes. And it runs on an 9-volt battery. And it's got two little coils you put on each side of the entry, in most cases like on a leg. Or if it's on the back, you put it in a figure eight position. The drawings are all available and with the instructions. We've got instructions as to how to apply it, and we'll be happy to discuss that with anyone and see if it fulfills their needs. We don't give false hope. If somebody calls and says they've got cancer, or they've got arrhythmia of the heart, or they've got a brain problem, then we'll flat out tell them we're not going to sell them a unit. Because we don't want them using it. We've done a fair amount of work now with people that have the side effects of Lyme disease.
I was going to ask you about infection. You know, anything from prion disease to Lyme's to other mycoplasma, other intracellular infections. What do you got there?
We've had mixed results on it. I have had a number of people with infections from Lyme disease that swear by it. It's been successful, and I've probably had an equal number who said they didn't notice any results at all. So I tell people candidly that there's mixed results. It's probably a 50-50 chance. If you want to try it, be my guest, but don't go into it with the idea that it's going to be the cure-all. If it's tendonitis in a muscle or pulled muscle or a broken bone, then we can give pretty good assurance we're going to deal with it. Now, we are not a substitute for surgical intervention. We always like to have a doctor involved in a prognosis and a diagnosis before we do it. Because let's say a person has a broken bone and it's out of alignment, this unit is not going to align that bone up. It still
It may heal it very quickly in the wrong position.
That's correct.
That would be a mess.
The doctor's got to go in and set that bone and get it lined up and then put the unit on. And the unit will go through a cast. The field will go through a cast. You cannot have metal in the field. That will interrupt the signal. However, if you've got orthopedic pins, it works quite well. As long as the pin is 316L stainless or titanium, which I believe is all they're using now, is orthopedic
titanium
screws.
Yeah, titanium takes care of that problem pretty well. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We've come to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Yes, my contact information is, my phone number is 832-723-8884. And my email address is drdr.donnierudd, D-O-N-N-I-E-R-U-D-D, @gmail.com. And that's on the website, both the phone number and the email. And I'm available pretty much at any time, or one of my people, to answer questions. We'll take as much time as somebody needs to discuss it, and we're always happy to discuss it with people and see if it's the right thing for them.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We've been talking to Dr. Donnie Rudd on pulsed electromagnetic therapy as well as stem cells and how the two relate. This is a exciting new field of medicine, especially with plastic surgery. I think it's going to be an answer to some of the problems we don't really have good solutions for. Next week, we will be interviewing Julia Shoplick, Honest Medicine, Effective, Time-Tested, Inexpensive Treatment for Life-Threatening Diseases. And then on the 7th of September, Rana Prince, Sacred Journey of the Heart, which is a DVD, a DVD. Noetic Science Meeting next month, Dr. Nadia Danani will be speaking about homeopathy. That'll be Thursday, September 19th at 7:15 at the Georgetown Square office. And again, thank you for joining us, and tune in next week.
Thank you for letting me be here.
You're welcome.